morning. My name is Michael McCusker. Today would be the 124th birthday of Aaron Copland, the famous American composer of Appalachian Spring, and also that of the infamous Joseph McCarthy, who politically crucified everybody to the left of Attila the Hun in a series of U.S. congressional hearings in the early 1950s. And so we have Donald Trump again. There was a great opportunity of electing as president of the USA an excellently qualified woman to be president whose tri-racial inheritance represented America's three major races. But instead, Americans once again chose the felonious Donald Trump. If you don't already wish we had not, it's more than likely most everyone will soon enough. He should be in the jailhouse rather than the White House. I anticipate an inquisition under Trump, not unlike the earlier Spanish version of the 15th century or the infamous Night of the Long Knives by the Nazis, murdering their critics as well as attempting to rid Europe of Jews, Slavs, and everybody else not sufficiently Aryan. The USA is about to enter an exceedingly brittle era in which its president just might be more assassination prone than most of his predecessors, in consequence to his empirical Caligula Nero style of rule. The Republican Party is no longer forevermore to be known as the party of Lincoln. It is now, as it has been since his first term, the party of a petty political criminal who escapes imprisonment by his reelection for crimes he has committed while previously president and will most likely commute his unlawful purges against democracy. And now, from the Associated Press, Harriet Tubman awarded posthumous rank of general on Veterans Day. The revered abolitionist Harriet Tubman, who was the first woman to oversee an American military action during a time of war, was posthumously awarded the rank of general this past Monday. Dozens gathered on Veterans Day at the Harriet Tubman Underground Railroad State Park in Maryland's Dorchester County for a formal ceremony making Tubman a one-star brigadier general in the state's National Guard. Wes Moore, Maryland's governor, called the occasion not just a great day for Tubman's home state, but for all of the U.S. Today we celebrate a soldier and a person who earned the title of veteran, Moore said. Today we celebrate one of the greatest authors of the American story. Tubman escaped slavery herself in 1849 and settled in Philadelphia. Intent on helping others achieve freedom, she established the Underground Railroad Network and led other enslaved black women and men to freedom. She then channeled those experiences as a scout, spy, and nurse for the Union Army during the Civil War, helping guide 150 black soldiers on the gunboat raid in South Carolina. Nobody would have judged Tubman had she chosen to remain in Philadelphia and coordinate abolitionist efforts from there, Moore said. She knew that in order to do the work, that meant she had to go into the lion's den, Moore said. She knew that leadership means you have to be willing to do what you are asking others to do. The reading of the official order was followed by a symbolic pinning ceremony with Tubman's great-great-great-grandniece, Tina Wyatt. Wyatt hailed her aunt's legacy of tenacity, generosity, and faith, and agreed Veterans Day applied to her as much as any other service member. Aunt Harriet was one of those veterans informally. She gave up any rights that she had obtained for herself to be able to fight for others, Wyatt said. She is a selfless person. Harriet Tubman's status as an icon of history has only been further elevated within the last few years. The city of Philadelphia chose a black artist to make a 14-foot bronze statue to go on display next year. In 2022, a Chicago elementary school was renamed for Tubman, replacing the previous namesake, who had racist views. However, plans to put Tubman on the $20 bill have continued to stall after all these years. And continuing with Harriet Tubman, an article by Petula Dvorak. Harriet Tubman, like most black women of her era and many black women today, was often dismissed, underestimated, and ignored. That's what made her such an effective spy and scout. It's also the reason that it took our nation 160 years to honor her properly for her military service. They finally did on this Veterans Day, coming in entourages and motorcades to her land, the vast, lonely expanse of the Blackwater National Wildlife Refuge on Maryland's eastern shore, to see Tubman posthumously become a one-star brigadier general in the Maryland Army National Guard. A governor, generals, and scores of veterans drove past the loblolly pines and tall salt meadow cordgrass that Tubman navigated on foot in the dark over and over again. She walked from there to New York or Philadelphia, just using the stars and the water, Major General Janine Burkhead, the head of Maryland's National Guard, said Monday. Those years as a conductor on the Underground Railroad prepared her for the extraordinary service that the military has honored at last. Today, we celebrate one of the greatest authors of the American story, said Maryland Governor Wes Moore, Maryland's own General Harriet Tubman. Her military service is not a familiar part of Tubman's legacy for most Americans. We hear her story in the context of honoring black leaders or women, but not so much on Veterans Day. Usually it was that she freed slaves and that she was the conductor of the Underground Railroad, said Burkhead, who grew up on Maryland's eastern shore and is familiar with the stories of Tubman she learned in school. But as she grew older and entered the military, Burkhead began to appreciate the significance of America's first black female combat veteran. A general takes care of people, absolutely, Burkhead said. But a general is also tactical. A general is operational. A general is strategic. And she was all of those things. For many, she was called Moses, but Burkhead called her General. At the start of the Civil War, Tubman was known for her talent and bravery, guiding more than 70 enslaved people to freedom through the Underground Railroad. She was so good that there were rumors that she was an Ashanti sorceress who could take on the form of a leopard, according to the Army Historical Foundation. Tubman was not a commando or a steely-eyed killer, but she was able to do what neither of those types could do, pass through enemy lines and talk to her people about the local situation, the Historical Foundation wrote. She was what intelligence analysts today would call a human terrain specialist who knew how to work with the people to accomplish her mission. Her most daring raid was in June 1863 when Tubman directed three steamships up the Combahee River in South Carolina. Because of the intelligence collected by Tubman and her knowledge of the terrain that night, more than 750 enslaved people were liberated. They came down every road, across every field, just as they had left their world and their cabins. Women with children clinging around their necks, hanging to their dresses, running behind, all making at full speed for Lincoln's gunboats, wrote a reporter who interviewed Tubman for the Springfield Weekly Republican on January 30, 1869. 800 poor wretches at one time crowded the banks with their hands extended toward their deliverers, and they were all taken upon the gunboats and carried down to Beaufort, the article said. We talk about this idea that leave no one behind is not just a statement. It is a growing philosophy, said Moore, who is also an Army veteran. But let's be clear about who the original leave no one behind was, because there is nobody who defined leave no one behind in the way that General Tubman left no one behind. 2 years after that heroic raid, Tubman was appointed nurse matron at Fort Monroe's Colored Hospital in Hampton, Virginia, then was summoned to Florida to treat a dysentery epidemic among Union soldiers because of her talent with herbs and medicinals. She was also a skilled cook who nourished the injured with her meals. Tubman was initially denied the monthly $25 military pension for her service. Instead, the government offered her the $8 a month widow's pension after her second husband, Nelson Davis, died, a slap in the face. Representative Sereno Payne, Republican of New York, lobbied on her behalf, arguing that her own valuable service should be enough to earn her a war veteran pension. After arguing about it for a year, Congress offered her $20 a month. The $20 still bedevils her legacy. 10 years after it was announced that she would be the new face of the $20 bill, it still has not happened. And after years of advocates fighting to have Tubman be one of the two icons that Maryland displays in the U.S. Capitol, the state is still represented by two men, Charles Carroll and John Hanson, in Statuary Hall. Tubman's constant fight for recognition and respect was recognized by some. Frederick Douglass wrote her a letter in 1868 telling her that he got it. I have the applause of the crowd and the satisfaction that comes of being approved by the multitude, Douglass wrote, while the most that you have done has been witnessed by a few trembling, scarred, and footsore bondsmen and women whom you have led out of the house of bondage and whose heartfelt God bless you has been your only reward. This is still true today. Douglass's words are an important reminder that the contributions of black women are often overlooked, disregarded, and forgotten, said Speaker of the Maryland House of Delegates, Adrienne A. Jones, a Democrat from Baltimore County, as women in the audience cheered her on. The commission, the ceremony, the military band, and officials were a step in the right direction. It's one step, said Tonette Coffey, one of Tubman's great, great, great grandnieces. She was one of about a dozen Tubman descendants, many of whom wore T-shirts declaring their heritage. One step of thousands left to honor her legacy, Coffey said, saying that Other steps include addressing poverty, education, mental health issues, and substance abuse in their community. The Underground Railroad is still under construction. We are still fighting many injustices today, she said. If she was here today, she would probably be fighting to eradicate those issues. And now, by Danny Aguiano. Portland's first ranked choice vote elects progressive outsider as mayor. In 2022, it appeared the political winds in Portland, Oregon, one of the U.S.'s most progressive cities, were beginning to shift. Residents who had grown frustrated over the city's approach to homelessness rejected the incumbent, Joanne Hardesty, the first black woman to serve on the city council, in favor of the Law and Order Democrat, Renee Gonzalez, who pledged to back an expanded police force and clean up, quote-unquote, Portland. But this month, as swaths of U.S. electorate moved to the right, the Pacific Northwest city took a markedly different approach. Residents elected the most diverse city council in Portland history, opting for more progressives, and rejected Gonzalez as mayoral candidate. Instead, they chose Keith Wilson, a businessman who has never before held office and has promised to end unsheltered homelessness in a year. Wilson had large leads over his competition in the election, the first in which the city used ranked choice voting, and in the latest results was leading the second place candidate 60% to 40%. The most conservative candidates for mayor and the county board, who took hard-line stances, lost. Richard Klukas, a political science professor at Portland State University, pointed out. Both were defeated significantly, he said, because Portland remains a very progressive city, despite what people may have heard elsewhere. The results came as the city was in the midst of what officials have described as a once-in-a-generation change to its government system and major voting reforms. This month, for the first time ever, Portland used ranked choice voting to elect a mayor and a larger, more representative city council. The new officials will have different roles as Portland moves from a commission form of government to one overseen by a city administrator. Voters approved the overhaul 2 years ago, the same year Gonzalez won, as a city of 630,000 people grappled with a declining downtown, rising homelessness, a fentanyl crisis, growing public drug use, and a sluggish recovery from the pandemic. Voters appear to take out their dissatisfaction with crime, homelessness, and drug use on Hardesty, the most progressive member of city council, said Ben Gaskins, a political science professor of Lewis and Clark College in Portland. Some have speculated the city was beginning to recoil from its progressive values, particularly after voters in the county ousted the progressive district attorney for a challenger endorsed by police groups. That came shortly after Oregon moved to reintroduce criminal penalties for the possession of hard drugs, in effect, scrapping the state's groundbreaking drug decriminalization law. Claims the city is turning away from progressivism are significantly overstated, Gaskins said. Instead, the shifts indicate an electorate that is more focused on tactical concerns rather than ideological ones. And now, after Trump's election, women are swearing off sex with men. This has been a long time coming. It took only a few hours after news of Donald Trump's re-election for a sad spectacle to unfold online and beyond. The far-right slogan, "Your Body, My Choice," tweeted by white nationalist pundit and organizer Nick Fuentes, spread online and off, sparking waves of abuse against women. "You no longer have rights," was one of many similar messages addressed to women by extreme misogynist Andrew Tate, who is facing trial for rape and human trafficking charges in Romania. He denies these charges. Meanwhile, calls for the creation of rape squads emerged in far-right groups. This onslaught of violently misogynistic speech made even clearer what had already been plain to see, that too many men do not view women as people with equal dignity and rights, but as inferior creatures to be coerced. And this, in turn, has sparked another reaction. Since Trump's election, 4B, a South Korean-founded separatist movement of women who swear off relationships with men, has been trending on social media. This viral moment highlights a feeling that has been brewing for much longer. Women's discontent with heterosexual relationships and their anger at men's increasingly unchecked misogyny. In recent years, male supremacist ideology has become mainstream, promoted by manosphere entrepreneurs who are thriving in the attention economy by feeding young men's resentment towards women. As aggrieved young men have been sucked into social media bubbles, gender polarization has followed. Boys who have grown up on a diet of misogynist content are embracing authoritarian strong men who court them with promises to take away women's rights. Young women, on the other hand, increasingly favor liberal politics. It has been 106 years since Armistice Day, 1918. Planet Earth's human population has just commemorated the end of the First World War while awaiting its probable obliteration by nuclear weapons first used to end the Second World War. This is Michael McCusker. Joanne Rideout is this program's engineer. Kamala Harris, San Francisco native, might be the best choice for the free state of Ecotopia, which would comprise the three Pacific Coast states and possibly British Columbia, as previously envisioned by West Coast dreamers. Perhaps Portland or Seattle or Vancouver, B.C., might be the capital city of such a breakaway government. Happy Thanksgiving.
You've been listening to A Story Told on KMUN, featuring Michael McCusker, journalist, activist, former firefighter, and Vietnam veteran. Michael has been sharing essays and poetry on A Story Told since 1987. For 30 years, he published the North Coast Times-Eagle newspaper out of his home in Astoria, Oregon. Michael currently shares his work and the works of other authors from his home on the Central Oregon coast. Join us here next week for A Story Told.